Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Coming up on today's episode, it's Deadline Eve. We break down the latest with the Winnipeg Jets and the rest of the NHL as we sit just hours ahead of the trade deadline.
Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
What's good and welcome to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki or the podcast at Skates Plates Pod. All right, let's get right into it here as it's our version, at least, of NHL Christmas. The deadline is almost upon us. We are literally just hours away, so plenty to get into. Let's not waste any time. Joining me once again is CJOB's Tyson Rewicki. Tyson, how are we doing today? That's great. Don't care. Let's talk deadline day.
Yeah, that's all that needs to be said. I don't even know. That's all I care about. So let's get
well,
going.
It's been a pretty interesting couple of days since we last spoke on the podcast. Wednesday seemed like unofficial trade deadline day. Unfortunately, so far, it has not involved the Winnipeg Jets getting in on the madness. Even more unfortunately, Western rivals have strengthened themselves quite considerably here. So there is a decent amount on the line for Chevy, the players, the Jets, and the fan base here as we head into the big day, trade deadline day, Friday afternoon. I mean, there's a few different ways we can go about this. To me, it's not even more. We've kind of made our thoughts clear on what the Jets should do. There's no point in really getting upset at what the Jets haven't done so far this week because it's just wasted energy. Like, Chevy could pull the blockbuster out of his ass at 2 p.m. or he could do nothing. Like, we just don't know right now. So I don't even think it's necessarily going down that route. But what do you make of this? Especially because this is how the trade deadline itself has played out. Do the Winnipeg Jets need to make a move? Because the Avalanche have gotten into the fray. The Golden Knights have gotten into the fray. The Edmonton Oilers have gotten into the fray. Do they need to react to what we've seen so far with Vegas doing Vegas things? The Avs really making a big-time push and shocking everybody with maybe the trade of the season so far in terms of unexpectedness. And then Edmonton making some solid additions, finally sending that first-round pick out the door.
Yes, they do need to react. And I would even say they need to overreact in this situation.
Yeah, I knew you were going to do that, Tyson. I love it.
But honestly, like this, there's been so much discourse over the past couple of days on X, formerly known as Twitter. But I'm in this boat where the picks next year don't even really matter either. Because if you want to be competitive going into next year too, then you might as well make the move now and have a guy for two playoff runs, right? Like a guy who's going to be not on an expiring contract, but like I just, there's so much value in having those two playoff runs here. And you have the ammunition to pull off another impact player move to this team. And that's what they need to compete now in the West, because all four of those teams just got a lot better that you mentioned. The Avs, Stars, Oilers, and Knights. Like they all made moves, and by the sounds of it, they're all not done either. Like there's going to be a bit of an arms race. And I kind of like that a lot of the insiders kind of don't seem like they know what Chevy's doing.
I would agree with that 1,000%. Because if it was, this is kind of perfect where as of now, it's just tinkering. But Chevy's tinkering isn't like other tinkerers, right? When things are quiet, that's usually when the big stuff starts to happen. That's kind of like the main reason why I'm not getting upset about the inactivity so far, because he's shown that on the actual deadline day itself, he's able to find a way to make a move that nobody saw coming. And he's done that a number of different times. So at least on that front, status quo. Normally, I would disagree normally with the premise of teams in your conference make a move, therefore you have to make a move. Because I do believe that a team 90% of the time just needs to go their own course, right? Like, you don't worry about the noise externally. What other teams are doing, that's fantastic. What's best for your team, go ahead and do that. Don't, you know, no need to follow whether teams in your division conference are making noise or are not making noise. This is not one of those occasions. This is the time where you almost need, like you said, to put a bit of an emphasis on avoiding standing pat after the Sean Monahan trade. Now, it is important to remember the Jets did make a decent-sized trade already, so it's not like they've just, you know, sat on their hands this entire season. But I just think that what Colorado's done, what Dallas has done, and I'm going to include Logan Stankoven in Dallas's deadline moves, because he looks like an impact player right out of the gate. Not Lux. He's an impact player right out of the gate for them. So you have Dallas making multiple moves, Colorado now making multiple moves, Vegas. I mean, maybe Theodore goes on LTIR and they get Crosby. Like, I don't know. Vegas is doing stuff. And then Edmonton has kind of under the radar done their thing. If you don't do anything and you're the Winnipeg Jets, you're probably the fifth best team in the Western Conference right now. And that's best case scenario, I would say.
And also, can I just add that when you're looking at the team over the last couple weeks, there's been some obvious weaknesses in their lineup.
They're leaking oil, yeah.
Yeah, like we've noticed with the Nick Ehlers distribution, the Cole Perfetti scratching and then being on demoted to the fourth line. Like, there are holes in this lineup now where if those issues don't sort themselves out, then you're in real trouble come playoff time. So I feel like you're forced to in this situation.
Yeah, yeah. And it, like we touched on in our previous episode, Tyson, like, yes, this team, in terms of their outlook over the next 2 to 3 years, things look solid. There is absolutely no guarantee that things are going this swimmingly next year, right? There's no guarantee 2 years from now. I mean, really, any team can look 2 years ahead at this point, pretty much. But, I mean, even going into next year, like, there's legitimate, not concern, but I think there's legitimate questions about Nick Ehlers' long-term fit with this team. Brendan Dillon, UFA. Dylan DeMello, UFA. I mean, Lauren Brossoit, right? Like, there's a lot of moving pieces here for the Jets that, like, it's working right now. It could be a completely different team next year. And so when you have the opportunity in front of you here, I think you just need to grab it by the horns and take it and make a couple of big moves here. It doesn't have to be trade all of our first-round picks and all of our prospects, right? But I think there are some moves available here that the Jets can do that we would consider, you know, the opposite of depth adds. I honestly, Tyson, I think depth adds are the last thing this team needs to make, and making moves like that is a terrible use of resources. So I'll just put that there on the table right then and there. But again, let's just reiterate, Connor Hellebuyck, 95% going to win the Vezina Trophy. Josh Morrissey is having another top 10 defensive year. Mark Scheifele's pretty quietly been outstanding for this club. And you still have, you know, a trio of high-end support pieces behind him up front in Vilardi, Connor, and Ehlers. Again, there's no guarantee this all goes to plan next season, especially, you know, Hellebuck's about as dependable as it gets. But as we know, goaltending can be volatile season to season. When you've got the chips falling as they are right now in your favor and the chance, a pretty good chance at that, to get first in the division, let's be a little borderline reckless here and let's find some pieces to come in and let's make a run at this. Because if the Jets do, again, doesn't have to be two high-end pieces that are brought in, but if they make two more legitimate additions, I think there's a case to be made that they're right up there with the best of the best in the Central and the best of the best in the Western Conference. And if you have that opportunity, go out there and take it.
I couldn't have said it better myself. right? Like, on it, like, you touched on every point there. Like, you never know what's going to happen with next season and next season. Like, Josh Morrissey and Connor Hellebuck, Mark Scheifele, they can continue to be elite players. They're all having career seasons this year. And maybe not numbers-wise necessarily, but impact-wise.
They're looking at their peak, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. And even if things start to go down a little bit down here, that's a huge impact to this team, where if those keys aren't moving, then you're screwed. So you have to capitalize on this opportunity. And there's a lot of pieces out there that you can really improve this team and really help this team in a playoff run. So I honestly think it's a no-brainer. I think Chevy kind of wants people to think that he's out of the race on a couple things, maybe to divert some other division rivals from maybe trying to make some more moves. So maybe that's kind of the play that he's going for. But I think that you got to make a move here. And I'm confident that the Jets will make at least one trade that impacts the team in a very positive way.
You think Chevy's got one more trick up his sleeve?
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be like grade A talent going from Winnipeg to another team, but I could see some B-plus pieces moving, some B pieces moving.
I'm trying not to be skeptical on that, but I don't know. I just don't have an overly great feeling that something big's happening in Winnipeg over the next, 15 hours or whatever it ends up being. Now that we mentioned what they should do, we know the names that are gone, the names that are available to some degree. What would you like to see the Jets do, Tice? If you're in Chevy's shoes, what are the moves made to get the Jets up there with the other contenders in the West after their activity over the last several days?
Well, I mentioned his name before, and I think this is a move that can be a huge add to this team, and it's really not going to cost that much. And I'm still on the Alex Barabanov trade. I want Barabanov on the Jets. I think I just like that fit on the team. He helps the power play in ways. He's another kind of scoring forward. I just feel like they need another kind of Cole Perfetti in that role there. And Cole Perfetti's not filling that right now. So I think Barabanov he is a little bit more, he's actually quite dependable on his own end. It's not the worst. I just think that a guy like that could really impact the top nine. And then from there, I'd go after a right-handed defenseman, I think, and see if you can maybe, I wouldn't necessarily put all my chips into that basket, but if there's a guy out there who could contribute at a Neil Pionk level or slightly above a Neil Pionk level, I would jump on that too.
Barabanov. Yeah, I mean, the Jets have a good history of getting OVs from San Jose these past 12 months or so. So I mean, maybe you're onto something there. For me, and it's a guy that I just this whole time assumed wasn't available, but he's available now. I mean, the reason we know that, one, the insiders are saying it. Two, he's being held out of Thursday night's action due to trade-related reasons. So he's legitimately on the clock. He's a guy that I always mention as like an archetype for who I think Colby Barlow could be, who I've always thought the Jets could use somebody of in their forward group. I think the Jets have kind of been, given a bit of a gift here, that the fact that he's on the block, but I'd be going hard after Tyler Toffoli. No question, no doubt about it. And if this team is hell-bent on Scheifele and Connor, and likely Scheifele, Connor, Vilardi as your top line, Ehlers, Monahan, Toffoli is pretty damn attractive. Like, even your greatest pro Ehler fan would have to look at that and be like, Ehlers and Toffoli together, that would be a good way to get him a little bit more time on ice, because you're not giving up a decent amount for Toffoli just to have him play 12 minutes a night, right? So that to me is the guy that I would be going after. He provides that playoff element that so many people talk about, but he does that and produces. I think he's the perfect fit for this team. And so that's the guy that I'd be going head over heels for. If you can get a defenseman after that, great. But yeah, I'm all in on the Tyler Toffoli train. I know it's a completely different style of game, but I think the Jets should still be in on Buchnevich, especially if the Blues are willing to retain 50%. I mean, my God, to get a point-a-game player at $2.5 million, yeah, you pay two first-round picks. And of course you do that. And for two playoffs and a season and a half. Like, of course you go after somebody like that.
Well, and that's what I mean when I like think about giving picks up next year, because there's no, I would highly doubt that there's going to be a player akin to Pavel Buchnevich next year at the deadline. I really don't think there's going to be one. Like, he is quietly one of the most underrated point producers in the league. Like, he's consistently been point per game almost his entire career before, like, besides early on, obviously, but like, he's just constantly produced. And I think that if you have the opportunity for that guy to, and you can toss him in the Connor spot on the power play, maybe he QBs the power play and just gives it an entirely different look, or he can help run the second unit. Like, it's just having that extra support on the second line is just huge. And a guy that could potentially even carry that line with Nick Ehlers and Sean Monahan, that's to me, that's priceless.
Make it happen, Chevy. Come on. Do it. You know, as far as, I mean, that's always the dream scenario. It's difficult for that to happen for any team to get, you know, two high-end guys coming in. But you know what I wouldn't mind as almost like a buy low or a plan B, plan C is Jason Zucker out of Arizona. You know, the Jets, I'd have to see how the cap works and things like that, but they wouldn't really need Arizona to retain much, if at all. And I like having, I mean, to me, there needs to be more shoot first guys on this team. And that's what Jason Zucker does, and he does that best. And I think he'd be, I don't know, third round pick probably? Like maybe or a B prospect, something like that. I would be okay. You know, even if the Jets struck out on Toffoli and Buchnevich to hold on to some assets, but brought somebody like Jason Zucker in, I could be convinced that that's a decent way to go about it.
Just because my brain's working absolutely Moneyball levels right now, what price would you be willing to pay if you attached Nate Schmidt in that deal for Zucker to open up some cap space for another deal after that? Would you do Chibrikov and Schmidt for Zucker? Or Montreal second?
The only thing that's kind of throwing me for a bit of a loop is that the cap's going up and those salary cap dump trades aren't as putative as they were in the past. So I don't know. I'm going to have to think about that one.
They have a history with the Brian Little, like with the Coyotes facilitating some cap space for the Jets with the Brian Little trade.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I'll have to think about that. But that's definitely an option that's on the table for Winnipeg, especially, you know, I mean, at times Schmidt's their seventh defenseman. So, you know, if you can get rid of...
You would need a defenseman, though, and after that, in that situation.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's enough guys you could throw for late-round picks to bring somebody in there.
It would be nice to have Declan Chisholm.
It would be nice, but we don't have to get into that right now because we want to try to keep it positive around here. I'm still hopeful that Jordan Eberle could potentially be somebody that's on the block, even though I want to see him go to Edmonton just for the storyline. But I still think that, and that kind of fits Chevy's MO too, I think, Tice, where, you know, kind of quiet out of Seattle. Will he sign an extension? Won't he? Chevy likes to operate in the dark. I kind of wonder if Jordan Eberle is higher up on the Jets wish list than some of us might think. So we'll keep an eye on that as we get through it here. But yeah, I think we're in agreement. A lot of people are in agreement as well that, you know, trading fifth or sixth round picks ain't going to cut it after what we saw over the course of the last few days. And time's a ticking for Chevy to make a move here. And we'll see what the Jets do with just hours to go before the trade deadline. Now, let's take a look around the rest of the NHL, Tice. So we're recording this. It's 8:30 p.m. Thursday night. So if anything happens after this, we are not held liable. There will not be another recording. Like we did during the Shifley Hellebuck extensions after an hour-long episode. But what do we make of what we've seen so far? I think the big thing is that Vegas is just unbelievable in terms of salary cap be damned. Like, everybody hates on them for doing it, but sure as what hell would like to see Winnipeg added another $20 million in salary. You know what I mean? So the Knights are terrifying yet again. And I think Colorado, it's – do you think the – who would – who in terms of your pecking order right now, Tyson, for the Central Division, Colorado, Dallas, Winnipeg, what order are you going as of Thursday night before the Jets potentially do more?
Unfortunately, I go Dallas, Colorado, Winnipeg.
I think I go Colorado, Dallas, Winnipeg now.
I still think Dallas has something up their sleeve too.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know.
It's been awfully quiet. And maybe it's because they are really just done, but you haven't heard like a peep out of Dallas since the TANF trade.
Yeah, maybe another defenseman for them just because they've been hit by injuries. But I don't know. For the Stars, I don't mind their group. I wonder if there's a fit out there for anybody else that's available. But I just think Colorado, I mean, they've been staring at a Nazem Kadri-like hole for 2 years now. And Middlestat is no Nazem Kadri, but he's a pretty damn good player. And I feel like people maybe haven't been paying enough attention to Bowen Byram's game the last year and a half or so, where he hasn't recaptured that magic of the Stanley Cup run. I think he's going to figure it out. I think it's a trade that both teams are going to be happy with. But I feel like, you know, the Avalanche, more so than Dallas and Winnipeg, improved in such a massive way here, where, you know, Walker is actually an improvement over Bowen Byram. And then on top of that, you fix your 2C hole and potentially Landeskog is in the pipeline.
And you got rid of Johansson's contract.
Yeah, like they're likely not done. They still have their first in 2024. So yeah, I think right now Colorado's in the driver's seat. And I mean, and look, you've got probably the second and third best players on the planet. On top of all that, Makar's having a, by his standards, an okay season, but McKinnon might win the Hart Trophy. So I think right now, as it stands, Colorado's the team to beat for me in the Central. Dallas is not too far behind, though. I think Winnipeg, I think they'd be pretty heavy underdogs against either one of those teams in any playoff round. Sucks to say, with how good the Jets have been for most of the season, but it's hard to ignore the reality of what we've seen from both those teams over the last couple of days. On top of it, I mean, we saw what the Jets did against Dallas a week ago, where the Stars gave them a bit of a wake-up call. We'll see if that's the impetus for a big move here for Winnipeg, but pretty wild taste that, you know, in the span of a week, 10 days, the Jets go from, yeah, you might say they're legit the best team of the division, to they're without a doubt about it the third best team in the division.
It's still a day to go.
Yeah, let's make a move, right? I think they're the third best team in the division right now. But I think if they make a move or two, and a good sized one, I think they can get pretty damn close to both those teams. Maybe you're just like in a series like 55-45, where the Jets might be slight underdogs. But I think they can close the gap enough to where there's legitimate optimism that they could take down either one of those teams in a playoff series. I do think it's going to take an addition for us to confidently say that, though.
Well, and if you make an addition to the starting four, like the starting lineup on forwards RD, you have the ultimate X factor in net, where Dallas with Ottinger's struggles this year and Georgiev in Colorado. I mean, Georgiev's got a lot of wins, but his numbers aren't terrific. There's a clear edge in net for the Jets. And if they can close that gap just a little bit, whether it's on forward or D or potentially even both, like you're not making up that difference in net. So getting that edge closer gives you almost an edge in any series against those two teams, in my opinion, honestly.
Well, and, you know, we don't like to say this, but Hellebuck's playoff numbers the last 2-3 times out have been just okay, like good. You know what I mean? Like he hasn't stolen.
I feel like last year doesn't totally count, though.
No, but you know what I mean, though. Like yeah, it's not sure. my point being, yes, the Jets would have a big edge in goaltending, but that doesn't always necessarily play out in the series. Like you do have to rely on what you have in front of the goalie. And that's where, if the Jets can strengthen that, then if Hellebuck is just good as opposed to great, you still feel good you can win a series. If he's great and you've got all that stuff, well, now we're cooking. Now we've got a little bit to chew on there. So we'll see what happens out there in the Central. Nashville's going to be an interesting team to watch too, because they mini bought, but also might mini sell as well. And then out there in the Pacific, I feel like people aren't really giving enough credit to the Henrique deal by Edmonton. People are just kind of like, meh. But I don't know. I mean, it's pretty crazy that he went to a cup final, Henrique, in his rookie year. And since then, I think that was 2012. Since then, he's played 4 playoff games. Like, I think you're going to get a pretty decent amount of rejuvenation out of Adam Henrique at Edmonton there. And realistically, the Oilers just need, like, literally anybody to score when McDavid and Draisaitl are not on the ice. And Henrique is going to be probably their best third center since those two have come into the league. So I like the move a lot. I think it was some pretty shrewd business by Ken Holland there. But it's pretty tough to ignore, Tice, that Vegas does what Vegas does, and you get the best defenseman on the market, and then a freaking former 30-goal scorer who could potentially explode even more than Barbashev did for them last year.
Yeah, it's just they're the best-run team in the NHL, and it sucks because they do kind of cheat a little bit, I guess, but not best, but it's not against the rules, so... That's down the NHL. It's on the Knights, and the Knights are just exploiting a flawed system that the NHL has put together, and they're reaping the benefits tremendously from it. Yeah. Like, that's,
or are they ever? Yeah. Now, I might change. I do feel like people are kind of underestimating Mark Stone's injury. He has a cut organ. Like, it's pretty difficult to fake that.
Yeah.
I'll say it now. I don't think he comes back for the first round of the playoffs. And, I mean, Peter Forsberg had something similar, and he was – I think he missed the entire playoffs in a similar sort of a time. Like, yeah, people just saying he's going to be back for game one of the postseason, I really don't think that's what's going to take place there. And I think that's why Vegas is going out and getting Mantha specifically, because they don't feel comfortable or confident that Stone is going to be ready – right at the start. Having said that, if he's back for game one, the NHL should punish the Golden Knights and strip them of a first round pick, because that is just way too it's just way too shady. And I do agree with our buddy Ross Cook, who's an avid listener of the podcast, that
shout out.
After this season, the NHL just quite clearly needs to institute a playoff salary cap. And you can maybe elevate, like, whatever the cap's going to be next year, I forget the exact number. Maybe it's $2 million over or something like that. But when you have Tampa going like $10 million over when they won the cup, Vegas every year going $10 million plus over when they win the cup, it just doesn't feel right. Like, I get that they're just kind of exploiting loopholes and things like that. And I don't think it's an asterisk that they win the cup and whatever it is, because, you know, if they feel like they can make a playoff spot by benching, quote unquote benching, or not having their star players in the lineup, then all the power to you. But it just doesn't look right. You know, like if it looks like a skunk and it smells like a skunk, it's probably stinky. It feels stinky to me. So I wouldn't mind the NHL adopting some kind of a system or a cap or whatever you want to call it that avoids situations like this, where we're not seeing teams go 15, 20, 25 million above the cap. You get a super roster, and that's why you're winning Stanley Cups all the time.
It is kind of awesome, though.
It's pretty odd. If the Jets were somehow able to do that, and they brought in Buchnevich, Parayko, Eberle, you'd be like, this is pretty sweet. Like, shit, right? Like, you'd like, give me the hate, give me your booze. Yeah. It feeds me. We're going all the way. So, yeah, I totally agree. It's kind of hypocritical when everyone says it's cheap for Vegas to do it, when in all reality, if your team did it, you'd be like, this is the best. I love my team so much. So, I'll tell you what, it would make beating Vegas in a playoff series all that sweeter if they went ahead and did all this and you were still able to, you know, ice a cap compliant roster in the regular season and take him down. So we'll see if the Jets can find a way to do that, and we'll get our answer to what they look like heading into the playoffs in about 10 hours time. That's not true. 14 hours time. Whatever. It's late. I have two kids. Leave me alone. But that'll do it for the episode here. Bit of a deadline recap and preview. And we will get right back at it tomorrow afternoon. A bonus Skates and Plates episode will come out tomorrow. We will recap everything that did or didn't happen. Tyson has a source is calling Tyson right now. A deal is in. No. But we'll recap all the action tomorrow. And we'll see what the Jets did or didn't do. And where they officially stack up once all the smoke clears in about 14 hours time. Until then, though, thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. CJOB's Tyson Rewicki here with us once again. Like I said, we'll be back at it tomorrow afternoon. Another episode for you guys breaking down the end of trade deadline day. Until then, have a great Thursday night. We'll talk to you Friday. Peace.